If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included, and billed separately. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hello, and welcome to Take the Black, your local fantasy and science fiction podcast, where we talk about all things going on in the SFF genres, as well and especially including Westeros, Game of Thrones, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, House of the Dragon, Stumbling Over Words, all those fun things. And today, perhaps a little bit more than usual, Middle Earth. I am Daniel Roman, the editor of Winter is Coming, one of your hosts, here with co-host Mark Nettles of House of Nettles. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, you know what? I had a very long day, a long week. I was tired, but you know, today I was revitalized. I know it's going to see your lovely face. I know it's going to have our awesome producer Sean here. And I'm like, I'm ready to go now. I'm ready to jump back into all that Westerosi, other Middle Earth, all of it.
Yeah. It's a nice way. You know, we're recording this kind of as we're cooling down for the day, and it's a nice way to get prepared for the evening. So I hope that, you know, viewers, listeners, wherever you are, if you're listening to this at night, enjoy it. And if you're listening in the morning, that's just as good a time anyway.
I'm just happy you're listening.
Yeah, totally. So we have some stuff to talk about today. Obviously, we are between seasons of Westeros stuff on Game of Thrones. The Knight of the Seven Kingdoms finished its first season in February. We don't have any new throne stuff until House of the Dragon premieres in June, but there's still a lot going on. And as always, we're kind of keeping our thumb on the pulse of these various productions. So we do have some stuff to talk about for both A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms and House of the Dragon season 3. And then later in the show, arguably our main ticket item, the thing that is in the title for the show, we're going to talk about the new Lord of the Rings movie that was announced that is being developed by late night TV show host Stephen Colbert and Peter Jackson. The Lord of the Rings, Shadows of the Past. Let's do Westeros first.
We'll wait.
Stephen will abide. He will still be there. Let's start with A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So we got kind of an official bit of news for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms this week. Did you see the stuff about the filming end date, Mark?
Yeah, I know it seemed like they had it planned to possibly end around June, because I know they were doing that filming in Spain for all those dry desert scenes that they will need for the filming of the second novella, the Sworn Sword. So it seems like it's And that's butting up right against where House of the Dragon season 3 is supposed to premiere. So it's all this Westerosi love all happening at the same time.
Yeah, totally. I kind of love how well these two shows are dovetailing together. You know, we got the first teaser for House of the Dragon kind of right near the end of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season 2 is going to wrap filming right as House of the Dragon is starting, and the DVD or Blu-ray, whatever, for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season 1 also releases in June. So June is going to be a big month for Westeros. But yeah, so the confirmation here came from Dexter Saul Ansel, who plays Egg, got a new acting agent representation at WME, which is a fairly prominent acting agency, I believe based out of LA. The Deadline article announcing this said that A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is slated to film through June. So that's about as official as it kind of gets, short of HBO saying, hey, we're ending in June. So let me ask you, this filming period, it's December to June, 6 months. That's twice as long as the first season. Should we be concerned about that?
No, it makes sense. It makes sense, though, because the first season, they were all in one location. They filmed all that. What was it? Northern Belfast?
Yeah, Northern Ireland, Belfast.
Northern Ireland. Okay, Northern Ireland. I'm just making up names. Northern Ireland in Belfast. And now we have this. They got to go to multiple locations. Maybe if it almost feels, for a show that's not getting any bigger, it does feel like, hey, you know, a little expansion. Now we're going to need multiple set pieces. We're traveling across the world to film it. It almost actually, I know they are going, and I can't remember if they mentioned, are they going to film any scenes from Dorne at all, possibly?
I think they mentioned that we will see Dorne, but I'm expecting it to kind of just be a montage at the beginning of the season or something. Like, I think Ira Parker did say we'll see Dorne. He said, he was asked, will we see Dorne in season 2? Duncan Egg go there, and he said they do go to Dorne. So he kind of like danced around it, but like the main story is not set in Dorne. So
yeah,
it's in the Reach, it's in the Southern Reach. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if we got a couple scenes there. You know, them staring forlornly at a sand dune or something.
And they're probably in the perfect place to film it. Hey, we need to film some desert scenes. Let's go to the dry, arid place. All right, we're going to film all the good sworn sword stuff over here. Let's film some of the flashback scenes right on the other side. So it's a whole new location.
Yeah, well, that is one of the interesting things about this June end date. So we did learn from like some local news outlets in Spain, because they're filming in Spain. So they basically did all of the interior stuff, all of the stuff they could do in a studio at Titanic Studios in Belfast, which is where Game of Thrones was home based for its entire run. They made that studio essentially. So they did all the interior stuff. Then they went to Spain, and local news in Spain reported that they had like booked out some campsites at this dam on Gran Canaria until May 15th. So that puts us just shy of that June end date. So like the dam they're at is like, it's drier than Belfast, but it's still not a desert, you know? So like, I wonder if they're gonna, you know, use that last little month of filming or what have you to zip around a little bit more and get some Dorne scenes, or head back to Belfast and do pickups or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think it's not cause for concern or anything.
No, it just makes a year feel full with all this time in Westeros. Like, we got two shows coming out. We got a guaranteed show coming out next year. So no long 2-year wait to make it back in there. Like, oh, okay, I'm feeling all that King's Landing Westerosi love.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And, you know, I saw a different interview with Ira Parker where he said he expected this season, like you said, it's not getting bigger, this show. They have the same budget for season 2 they had for season 1. The Sworn Sword, if anything, is kind of almost a smaller story a little bit, because it doesn't have the joust. So, like, they need less stuff, but they need a dry place. So, like, there's some, and he said also there's more scenes with Egg, which is awesome. Yeah. But there are child labor laws, so they can't keep Dexter Solancel like on set for as long as they would keep an adult. So like that extends production a little bit too. But those are all good things, like fully behind that.
Damn laws. He doesn't need to read and do all that math yet. He needs to be filming in Night of the Seven Kingdoms, as we all agree.
That's right. Put that child to work. So yeah, it's good news for a Night of the Seven Kingdoms. The vibes remain immaculate. It, you know, they're filming, they're working on it. Right now they are filming in Spain for the next at least 2 months. I do want to ask you one thing. It's funny, we talked about this before the show, and we're like, we're not really going to talk about this, and we don't need to talk about this. But one other HBO thing that dropped today as we film this is the trailer for the new Harry Potter show. One thing I do want to get your take on. So that is coming out in Christmas 2026, they confirmed. So this Christmas, Harry Potter is dropping. Presumably, it's going to be a weekly drop. HBO doesn't really do binge drops. Do you think that is going to push back when A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms premieres?
I don't know why I would. I could see it being pushed back just because of when the show has wrapped up. Maybe they go into production a little longer. Maybe they want to, you know, of course, give it a little breathing room from however long that Harry Potter show is supposed to be. So if it's pushed back, maybe only like a few weeks tops, and maybe they want to release it during the time where in the northern hemisphere it's, you know, it's going to be dry and arid. Maybe try to get it closer to spring a little bit, just because you know, it is a knight's tale of a knight in the spring of his life. We got two people in the spring of their life. Let's, you know, let's get a little flowers blooming, all that happening. Maybe they want to push it back for that.
Yeah maybe they'll do like the, you know, Game of Thrones typically premiered in April. So maybe that's like they'll get back into that April rhythm. They've got a yearly Thrones show again. But yeah, our colleague Cody Schultz brought that up before this recording, that like, you know, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season one premiered in the middle of January, but HBO is probably not going to want to run two of its tentpole fantasy shows at the exact same time. So yeah, we may be looking at a slightly later premiere date for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, but like you said, you know, spring is still a great time for it.
Totally. And then there's no other Westerosi show to bump up against it. It has free reign for the whole year. So if they do want to push it to the summer, will I be mad I have to wait longer? Yes. Am I happy maybe this a spring summer break to tide me over until the next season? That's also good to me too.
Yeah, totally. So good stuff for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. The other thing, the other Westeros show, House of the Dragon, also got a few interesting tidbits that are worth bringing up, worth keeping you viewers and listeners who, you know, you watch this show to keep up to date on all this stuff and to hear us jabber about it. So we want to make sure you're keeping up with the latest. So House of the Dragon season 3, it is in post-production. It is premiering in June. Probably going to be a pretty important season for this show. Lots of big battles, lots of probably big character deaths, lots of fandom goodwill to win back, all sorts of stuff. They're doing reshoots right now. Have you heard anybody talking about the reshoots?
I saw some negative comments on the social web, and it's always, I feel like it's always the same people that don't understand that doing reshoots isn't a negative, or they just like doing that same argument. They hear reshoots and they're like, oh, it's all falling apart. The show's going to be the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like, no. Sometimes you see something in film and you're like, maybe we need to refilm that a little bit. I don't like how that was presented by the actor, or the lighting was off. And then you have instances where it's like, you know what? We need to add a conversation somewhere. Some of the best moments come from, hey, let's refilm this. Let's add a conversation, add a scene, just to bring all the story together. So I doubt you're scared of the reshoots either.
Yeah, nah. I think you totally hit the nail on the head. I feel like it's, if anything, it's a testament to kind of just how much negativity there is swirling around House of the Dragon as it's coming back, that like this totally normal thing that like so many productions do, like it's doing, like you said, very tiny reshoots, and people are really taking that and running with it about how the show is just a mess and all this stuff. And like, so Ryan Condal, who's the showrunner, he has his own podcast, which isn't as fun as this one, but it's still worth a listen. It's The Stuff Dreams Are Made Of. It's about props. So that's why I say it's not as fun, because it's just, let's talk about props. And it is a very interesting podcast if you are into how the sausage is made for films. He likes to drop little updates about House of the Dragon in there. And a while back, he brought up these reshoots just as like, the production is such a well-oiled machine at this point that they work it into the schedule from the start. So like, they don't even schedule them later and they're like, oh, we need reshoots. Like, they know there are going to be, like you said, things where they needed like another angle of someone, or the example he gave in a recent episode, because he got on again and he was like, I just need to put down these rumors. Nobody can leave our show alone and just let it get made and then enjoy it. We're doing reshoots. They're a small breezy thing. He said we were going and getting like this angle, this reaction. We didn't line blah, blah, blah up. We wanted to see this guy untying the horse. So it's a lot of those sorts of very, very tiny things just to make everything gel together a little better. So yeah, there's absolutely nothing to worry about with the House of beyond nothing. Like, this is just normal production stuff. Game of Thrones did it too. We just didn't live in this hypersensitive age at that time.
Exactly. If it was a big deal to the point they're refilming entire episodes, it wouldn't be coming out in June. It'll be a 2027 release date at that point. So I think we're gonna be okay.
Yeah, right? I think you're right. I think we'll be okay. I think House of the Dragon will be okay. I hope House of the Dragon will be okay. We're all kind of just waiting to see what it's gonna be like. But this is one instance where really nothing to worry about here. This is not a mark against House of the Dragon. This is just a production doing normal production stuff.
100%.
The other little bit of news that came out, so Fabian Frankel, who plays Sir Criston Cole, everyone's least favorite knight on House of the Dragon.
You're not telling me he's your favorite Kingsguard member?
I said least favorite.
He's my favorite.
Is he?
He just goes out there and does stuff, makes horrible decisions, and I love it. I'm like, you know what? If you're going to be bad at your job, you might as well be all the way bad. Don't be part of the way bad. It's almost a greatness in doing that.
Fail grandly.
Like, I call him Crispy Cole, because he be crispy on those decisions. He be sharp on doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, you can always count on him to do that. You know, he'll drag the head of a dragon back through the streets of King's Landing and turn everybody against his own ruling house without really thinking too hard about it.
Like, oh, you guys are supposed to like the dragons.
Whoops, I just showed you they can be killed. They're not gods, my bad. In all seriousness, so obviously, there's a lot of hate for Criston Cole because he does bad stuff, which is part of why he's actually a really good character, right? Like, you know, we've talked in the past about House of the Dragon being a little afraid to let us really hate the characters. Criston Cole is like the one example where they're like, nah, we're going to let him do all the most reprehensible shit we can think of. And, you know, we'll see how you feel about it. And I think it's a testament to how well they've done Criston that, like, people have a lot of strong opinions about him, probably more than most characters on the show. But I actually think for season two, I think he had one of the best arcs personally, to go out to war. And then it was so awful seeing these dragons fight that he's just like haunted by like this knowledge that like they're all doomed, like they're ants under their feet. He's not going to live through this.
Oh yeah. Realizing like, I got my sword here, but what's it mean when I'm looking at a 8-ton dragon? Like, what am I really doing? What are we doing? I can bet, like you said, one of the best arcs in season two. Hopefully they continue his disillusionment of the whole system coming up in season three.
Yeah, totally. So we brought him up because he appeared at Budapest Comic Con last weekend. So that's March, I think, 20th to the 21st, something like that. He's filming a movie in Hungary, so that's why he was there. And he dropped some hints about season three. He talked about his journey with the show, a whole bunch of stuff. You can find, we've covered this at Winter is Coming, but you can also find the panel on YouTube if you want to watch. It's just a half an hour long interview with Fabian Frankel. He said that he expects we'll feel differently about the characters in House of the Dragon in its final two seasons. Here's his quote. He said, "I'll be very interested to see, like, as the next two seasons of Dragon unfold, how people's opinions on these characters shift, because I think they innately will, you know, as season 3 and 4 come out. So I'm excited for people to recalibrate in a sense." So, Mark, do you think this means Kristen Cole is going to become everyone's new favorite?
Based on what I know from the book, I think he will become no one's favorite. I don't know if there's a way to write him and, like, oh, maybe there's another side of it. So I'm not sure he was talking about his own character.
Yeah, I think you're right. I obviously, the big one that comes to mind, for me at least, when I see that quote is Rhaenyra Targaryen. Yes. Rhaenyra, you know, she has a darker arc in the book. She needs to get awful, essentially. Before this war ends, the show needs to let Rhaenyra be her worst self. And I'm hopeful that that's the season we're about to get, because they're running out of time for her to do it, you know. Yeah. So it's kind of got to happen now.
It's got to be now. They have no choice. Like you said, she's let her make a bad decision. Let her make a staunch decision that just ends up horrible. And we're all like, what is she doing? She shouldn't be queen. Like, I'm okay to think that. And yeah. I'll understand that maybe she should still be on the Iron Throne based on who are limited choices right now.
Yeah, but we got to get conflicted about it. We need those sorts of complicated feelings for this whole conflict to work, because, you know, that's the House of the Dragon, the Dance of the Dragons. It's about this family tearing itself apart because they just can't agree who should be the leader. So if we're gonna really get into that, Rhaenyra, you know, she drives some of her allies away in the book and really tests other people and, you know, does some awful stuff. So, yeah, obviously she's the one. She's the main one that Kristen Cole made me think of.
Now, since they only have two more seasons, it will be so awesome if they are able to get, because we spent two seasons hyping up how Team Black. We spend all the time, it's Team Black. They should be on the throne. They should be on the throne. They should be on the throne. Play with our emotions a little bit. Make us believe that maybe Team Green, like, have us feel like, maybe they are a better choice. Maybe they are what Westeros needs. Put King Aegon the Elder on the Iron Throne. Yeah. We all agree with that. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have an interesting story this season, too. You know, Aegon, he was kind of one of the breakout characters of season 2, I think. A lot of people really liked his performance, Tom Glenn Carney as Aegon II. He was really kind of, you know, trying to do his best, but just totally out of his depth. Kind of had been put on as a figurehead ruler and then makes a bunch of bad decisions. And we got to go with it and enjoy those and the fallout of all of those. But, you know, he got maimed pretty badly. He's now in hiding with Laris Strong. Aegon in the book just kind of disappears for a while, and then he comes back later in a big way. So they're going to explore where he went, which could be pretty cool, you know, kind of like how Thrones did something similar with Theon Greyjoy, where Theon disappears for like two whole books and then he comes back. The show didn't do that. It just showed what happened to him. I feel like Aegon, yeah, they can let us have some root for him a little bit this season. Neither of them should rule. Like I want to feel like I don't want Team Green and Team Black are both making mistakes. And man, they're just showing that we need a good old Northman down here to set things to rights.
House Bolton, yes, 100%.
Yeah, somebody get House Bolton and House Frey down here to sort all this out. So yeah, Fabian Frankel said that. I think Rhaenyra is obviously candidate number one. Aegon, totally too. I do think we might get a little more sympathy for Kristen Cole, honestly. And in this, we've seen some reports, some leaks and stuff like that that make it sound like this could be Fabian Frankel's final season on the show, season 3. So anticipating probably an exit for Kristen in the upcoming season, which if you've read Fire and Blood, you can probably guess because there, you know what happens to Kristen. Anticipating that this season. So like, if this is Kristen's swan song and he's away from King's Landing, because this is another thing he talked about, was like getting in the mindset of Kristen Cole and like how someone put it to him once that Kristen is this man who was taken out of his comfort zone and put in a castle and kept there for 25 years. And he kind of lost his mind. He fell in love with two queens and it just was a giant mess for him all the way through. And now he's away from the castle. He's off in the Riverlands trying to track down Daemon Targaryen and Caraxes. And like, maybe, like, I'm not saying make Kristen Cole a lovable teddy bear of a character. Like, that's not going to happen.
No.
But like, just a little bit more, like, let us get into the somber, like, Kristen knows he's doomed and he can only do so much to make him hate us, to make us hate him more at this point. He's away from all the people he did awful stuff to. Now he's just out in the world trying to, you know, serve his king.
I agree with you on that, because what is he going to do if he finds the dragon? That, just a man with a sword. Go nothing. Have at it, Kristen. I'll feel bad if he did find that dragon. I'd be like, damn.
Sorry, Kristen.
Go be the knight you truly are. Maybe he can slay the dragon. There's been one dragon slayer with a sword before. Maybe there can be two.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if Kristen does get any wins at all this season. You know, because he is on this march to the Riverlands, totally going to be outmatched by anything he finds there. Like, I feel like the only way he could have some wins, something go right for him, is if he's clever about it. You know, he pulls a Ramsay Bolton and they attack in the night or something. But you know, I'm not expecting a victorious season for Kristen. So I am curious if it's just going to be like bleak as hell all the way through, or we will see him have some ups and downs. We'll see. Are there any other characters who you think we may flip on in season 3 and 4?
Now that's a good question. I would have to say, besides Rhaenyra, I'm taking out Kristen Cole. I think they had us feeling a little sympathetic for Aegon. I think we're going to not completely flip to his side, but seeing where he is right now, what he has to do to possibly get back any semblance of power he had. Maybe we can come around to him slightly. I'm very interested to see what they're going to do with Allison. Very interested.
Okay.
Because right now, like, you know, I know she's lost a lot of power by the end of season 2. Is she going to continue on that arc? Will there be maybe an additional scene that does make us feel bad for what's going to happen? Because I know without any spoilers, there, I guess it's more of a rumor from In Fire and Blood, when a certain character rumored to force her to work in a brothel. Did that happen?
That's like a mushroom rumor too.
That was mushroom saying that, like, oh yeah, she was forced to work in a brothel during this time period. Like, come on now, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
could something be alluded to that, something close to that? Maybe. Will we feel a little bad for her? Maybe slightly. I would like to see what they do with that.
Yeah, totally. Someone says, I could send you to work in a brothel. And like, they can touch on it in that way without actually doing the mushroom rumor.
That would be too far.
yeah, way too far. Don't do that to Allison. But I agree with you. That storyline, that's one that I am both most excited for in season 3 and also most nervous about, because season 2 didn't really set it up. I feel like season 2 undermined it just a little bit. It's basically Allison with another character she hasn't seen much of in a long time, and how that impacts her and how her position of power changes and all that kind of stuff. I'm really curious to see what they do with Allison this season. So yeah, that's a good one. That's a good pick. Any others?
I know nobody likes Aemon as a character.
Aemon Dawson. What do you mean? Aemon's the best.
I'm Aemon's fan. Where's my house green hat? I had to put I keep saying house green, team green. I had to put my team green pin on my rimless hat, so I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm prepared for season three. But just maybe get a different understanding for his character. I know he was picked on as a little kid. That kind of helped shape the psychopath that he is now. Maybe we understand a little bit more. Maybe it is like we learned from learning in Night of the Seven Kingdoms, more nurture over nature. The surroundings helped shape who he was, who he is. And we can maybe just better understand, like, oh, because you guys did this, we got aim in one eye.
Yeah.
Instead of aim in smiley face. We ain't get aim in smiley face.
Yeah, it'd be a totally different story with aim in smiley face. Yeah, you know, I think that could totally be a good one. I don't think people are... I think the show is going to keep Aemon as a villain all the way through. But I think making him a more understandable villain, like you said, in the way that A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms did with Arion, I could... This is, again, this is kind of the season if they're going to do that, because just like Kristen, Aemon is probably going to spend most of this season away from King's Landing. And it's kind of this interesting thing of taking some of these characters out of the environments they've been in, where these toxic things are surrounding them all the time, and then putting them out on the road somewhere, and then how does that change them over time? And I think Aemon, there's a character that readers are going to really be expecting Aemon to spend a lot of time with this season, who I will not spoil, but yeah, I could see that having a huge impact and digging into, like you said, some of those, you know, reasons he is how he is. One other one that I think... opinions, they're two, they're kind of linked, these two, but there's one I think they're going to do a better job with, is Hugh and Ulf, the dragon seeds. You know, we started to get a little bit of that with Ulf even at the end of season two, where he gets a dragon and then he's immediately, it's going to his head, he wants more little birds to eat. But yeah, what do you think they're gonna really play with our emotions with those two?
I think they have to, and they need to, because it's left so open-ended in Fire and Blood for those two characters that they have so much room to play with, that if they don't, they've completely missed a huge opportunity. So yeah. I'm going to believe in Condal. I'm going to believe he's going to write those characters. For Hugh Hammer, he just embodies the people's champion. Like, hey, I'm this guy, I'm trying to come up. We know his parentage, Popsy, really closely linked to House Targaryen in the TV show. Make him that people's champion that we need, so it feels even crazier for the event that's going to happen probably at either the end of this season or beginning of next season.
Yeah, totally. I think so. Ulf's, he's likable. I feel like they've already telegraphed Ulf's issues, which is just the power is going to get to his head because he's so used to being at the bottom of the totem pole.
Yes.
Cool. I can get behind that. It's going to be uncomfortable in the best way. Hugh, I think, is going to be the more interesting one, because you're right. They did flesh out. He's already a better character or a fuller character in the show than he is in the book. The parentage stuff, not alluded to at all in Fire and Blood. They basically confirmed that he is the son of Sarah Targaryen, who is one of Jaehaerys's kids, Jaehaerys the Conciliator, who was exiled, if I remember right. I might be slightly off.
No, she was in the novel, she was exiled to, was it Lys?
I think so,
Well, no, she was exiled to, not Lys, to Old Town, and she ran away to Lys.
Yeah, that's right. Sarah gave Jaehaerys all sorts of headaches, essentially. Jaehaerys, he ruled really well, had a hard time with his kids. And Sarah was one that gave him an extra hard time. But yeah, so Hugh Hammer, bastard of hers. That's the all stuff the show made up that kind of feels like a really good addition. You know, House of the Dragon gets ragged on for some of the stuff it's added at times, but that change with Hugh is a really good one, I think. It just makes him more interesting. It kind of makes his connection to House Targaryen a little bit more interesting, knowing that he came from the offshoot of like a disgraced branch of the family, and now he's got a dragon, like not just any dragon, Jaehaerys's own dragon, like the grandfather who exiled his mom, he's got that dragon, Vermithor. But yeah, I feel like they could make him more sympathetic. Like, you know, Ulf feels like the guy who's just gonna be blinded by the power and not think too hard about it. And I feel like with Hugh, they have the opportunity to be like, here's a bastard born peasant who might actually understand the responsibility he's got a little bit more clearly. And then what choices he makes, I assume there will be reasons for them that the book doesn't really give you. It's just kind of like he made this choice and he's, you know, they it's a bad thing they do or whatever. Like, you know, it doesn't really get into their headspace. And I feel like they set up Tumbleton with his wife last season. Kat has family in Tumbleton, which is this really important city that is probably going to feature, especially at the end of the season, that Hugh will have stuff to do in. I feel like they've laid the groundwork. I think you're right. If they don't do a good job with Hugh Hammer, they botched it.
They missed a huge opportunity. Like you said, his wife's over there. Because what would you be willing to do to protect your wife, protect your family? And I'm right now, I believe in them because the story's right there. It's almost a layup. They just gotta. It's like there's a kill deal. You're in the paint. Turn around. Just put it in there. Just put it in.
Yep. Or what would you do if something happened to your wife? I almost wonder if. This is hard because I want to talk spoilers about this, but I don't want to spoil stuff for people. I wonder if maybe something happens and it changes Hugh's views about, you know, who's deserving of his allegiance and whatever.
Anyway.
I'm getting excited now. Come on, Ryan Condal. Don't let us down with this. We're back. Any other characters you could see challenging audiences you want to talk about?
I guess to list one more character, I'm excited to see, and it's more of a not one character, but Masaria's network of women within King's Landing, seeing what they do with that. It's well established. They're there. We've seen them in multiple seasons now. How are they going to be interacting with the city, and how will they help or hinder, you know, Team Black? It seems like they're staunchly Team Black. So how will they help for the events that will continue on?
Yeah, that's a good one. I've been really excited to see Mysaria back in King's Landing, and especially, you know, the addition of her almost kind of like will they, won't they a little bit with Rhaenyra, I thought worked pretty well. I think it will add an extra dimension to Daemon and Rhaenyra's relationship, hopefully, when they're back together. It kind of says something that neither of us picked Daemon for this. Because he's like the gray character of the series, going back to the beginning where you love Daemon, but he does something awful and you're like, ah, Daemon.
I feel like he was, you know, tripping balls so much at Harrenhal with all that magic. It seems like he's staunchly on the side of, I'm going to do, I mean, if I saw a vision of a lady giving birth to dragons and I had my wife right there, like, I'm going to be on her side too. I'm all in. I'm Team Dragon. I believe in the cause that we're doing on Team Black. It doesn't seem like there'll be too much fluctuation with his character this season, especially with the absence of Nettles. It's like, I don't know. It's like, I can't even picture like what they're going to do with his character now.
Yeah, totally. I'm imagining that Reyna will take Nettles' place, which I still hate. We talked about good changes they made. That's one where I'm like, oh man, I really don't like that you guys made this change. Reserving judgment, we'll see in season 3. I agree with you. I think Daemon's most controversial times are behind him a little bit, and to some extent it's like, you know, does that mean they changed his character too much? On the other hand, it's like that is kind of his arc in the book too. Like, by the time the Nettle stuff comes around, there is a feeling that Daemon is older, he's a little more tired, he's, you know, he's not quite the agent of chaos that he maybe was at the start of the war. He's seen a lot of awful stuff. And, you know, is kind of maybe not resigned, but just quietly committed a little bit more to what his future holds. So I'm excited for that side of Daemon. Like, he's going to be waging war in the Riverlands. He'll probably commit a few war crimes, I assume.
One or four.
Yeah. You know, I assume the fish feed, like, he'll be doing some war crimes in there. But I don't expect the viewers are gonna really have to wrangle with their feelings. If anything, that hopefully they'll be like, ah, Damon's back. But also, you know, he's a slightly less boisterous Damon than he once was.
When he does the war crimes, he just know he believes he's doing it for the greater good this time. Greater good.
He'll sigh as he does the war crimes instead of, you know, smirk about it. But yeah, so a lot of stuff coming in House of the Dragon season 3. So for as much, you know, maybe you're listening to this and you're not a chronically online person. You're like, what negativity? But assuming you're online, if you're listening to a podcast like this and you've probably seen some people, you know, grouse about House of the Dragon, there's a lot to look forward to this season, and we'll see kind of how they execute on it. But Fabian Frankel has got me hyped. All right. We may need to change the name of this episode at this point, because we're like 40 minutes deep and we haven't even talked about the thing we had as the title originally that may or may not still be the title when people listen to this. There's a new Lord of the Rings movie that got announced. Let's talk about that. Mark, we've never talked about Lord of the Rings really on this podcast. What is your what's your relationship with this? Have you read the books, seen the movies? How do you feel about hobbits and stuff?
I am pro hobbits. Okay. I've only seen the original trilogy and some of the first Hobbit. So I haven't divined in all of the Lord of the Rings lore. Gotcha. I know it. I see it. I know who Frodo is. I respect Frodo as a character. I'm in there with y'all.
All right. All right. Cool. Yeah. So I've read the books, watched all the movies. The Hobbit movies, not really missing too much, to be honest. They took a 200-page book and they were like, let's make it a trilogy. And it's like, that's a crazy decision you guys made. I hope you got more money for it. But yeah. So basically the sitch here, I'll give us the setup for this movie then. So it was announced as we're recording this, I think like in the past 24 hours, that the Hobbit movie, or the Hobbit movie, the Lord of the Rings movie that we knew about, The Hunt for Gollum, it's in production, it's going well. Peter Jackson put out a video for Tolkien Reading Day, I think. But there's another one. There was another Lord of the Rings movie. And it is being developed by Stephen Colbert, late night host, avowed Lord of the Rings Tolkien nerd. He and his son, screenwriter Peter McGee, have been developing this idea for like 2 years to do a movie that is a sequel to Lord of the Rings, but also kind of takes place during the first one, The Fellowship. And he's been developing it with Peter Jackson, and it's actually happening. So like, there's no chance the studio is going to like get cold feet or anything. Like, Warner Brothers shared this video. So like, it's a real thing. So it's called The Lord of the Rings, Shadows of the Past. I'm going to read the synopsis here. It says 14 years after the passing of Frodo, Sam, Merry, and Pippin set out to retrace the first steps of their adventure. Meanwhile, Sam's daughter, Eleanor, has discovered a long-buried secret and is determined to uncover why the War of the Ring was very nearly lost before it even began. So, gut reaction to this. Would you go see this movie? How do you feel about it on the face of it before we get into what even this exactly is?
On the face of it? I'm a little confused. I would be confused. I read enough of the articles, like, oh, I'm understanding what's happening. Okay, of course, cutscenes. Well, not cutscenes, but they didn't really adapt the end of the novel. 100% is what I interpreted from it. So I was looking at it. I'm like, oh, okay. So how much of this story, like, is it a big enough? I guess in my mind, I was thinking, is it a big enough story to be made into a feature length film?
So it's actually a lot of people are very confused about this. And to be fair, it's a kind of confusing premise. So it's the opposite of that. It's actually the beginning of the first book. So there are six chapters that they cut from the beginning of The Fellowship of the Ring that weren't in the movie, because basically Frodo and his pals leave the Shire, and then they go on they travel through the forest. They have a bunch of misadventures through the forest, and then they get to Bree, which is like their first major stop. While they're there, they encounter Barrow-wights, which are like zombies. They meet a forest spirit dude named Tom Bombadil, who likes to sing a bunch of songs and is kind of the most eccentric element of the entire trilogy. Peter Jackson left all of that out of his movie. So this new one from Stephen Colbert, he wanted to do something that was both, in his words, faithful to Tolkien's work, because Tolkien's work is very important to Stephen Colbert. Like, I think we can trust that he's not just like phoning this in. Like, the dude cares a lot about this.
I heard he speaks Elvish, or he learned Elvish.
I do not know that, but I fully believe it, because like he is like an avowed nerd of this stuff. Like, anytime he has a chance to sneak in Lord of the Rings references on his show, he does. So he wanted to do something that like actually drew from the books, but also, you know, didn't dishonor Peter Jackson's movies, because he loves those as well. So yeah, doing what sounds like essentially a framing story with old Merry Pippin and Sam, and Sam's daughter Eleanor, who's born after the end of, you know, the movies, when Frodo sets off, you know, with the elves, he leaves the Shire. So doing a framing story with those older characters, where they're looking back on this early adventure that kind of the movie skipped. So it's not really clear how they're going to make it make sense. Like, they'll show that this thing happened. Are they going to AI de-age them or something? Like, that's a big question too, is like, how are they even going to show these characters during what is supposed to be the first movie? So yeah, that's the sell of what this is. It's taking stuff Peter Jackson didn't think was good enough for his movie, and it's making a whole other movie out of it.
Okay, all right. Just so I know, I'm with you. I'm with you. So
it is a really weird set. It's more complicated of a setup even than The Hunt for Gollum, which is a little convoluted too.
Okay, yeah, that's not convoluted. But so this this first part of the book that they kind of skipped over,
yeah,
they're just doing it. They've made an original screenplay where the older characters talk about what happened on that adventure.
Essentially, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like Sam's daughter, Eleanor, probably finds, I don't know, Tom Bombadil's hat or something. Like, she finds something that clues her into that misadventure is not the right word. They had this detour on their way to do the One Ring, the whole fellowship. They had this thing where they almost didn't even make it to Bree, where they met Aragorn, that was just not talked about in the original film. And why wasn't it talked about in the original film? And now they're going to get into it. And like, I don't know if they're going to do something like their memories were lost, or, you know, how they will justify this. But I do, you know, I think Stephen Colbert cares enough that it's not going to be totally ridiculous. But yeah, it's a hard sell. Like, this is a very nerd angle to take.
You just gotta know it. And because you know what's funny? Recently, I've watched like YouTube videos and TikTok videos on Tom Bombadil. Did I say the name correct? Bombadil?
Yeah, Bombadil. Yeah.
Bombadil. Oh, I don't know what I was saying. Tom Bombadil. But I've seen YouTube videos. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I was like, okay, I understand. Because the premise of the video is, this is why this character didn't make it into the film. And I'm like, okay, I understand. He's a little too whimsy.
Yeah.
And Agent of Chaos-y. It's like, oh, we could take him out and it really wouldn't change anything within the story.
Exactly.
Okay, so now they're gonna maybe kind of add him in a little bit. Maybe we won't see him.
Oh no, we'll see him. Because Stephen Colbert said it's these six chapters. He named them. That showed a little picture of his book, his copy of Lord of the Rings with the chapter names. And so of these six chapters, like four of them are about Tom Bombadil. So like, it's absolutely going to have him. And Tom Bombadil is a whimsical, weird character. Like, he predates Lord of the Rings. So like, there's I think a poem J.R.R. Tolkien wrote that was about Tom Bombadil as essentially the spirit of primal nature. And then he just kind of thought Tom Bombadil was fun, so he put him in the Fellowship of the Ring, and they meet him. He sings them a bunch of songs. They meet Tom Bombadil and his partner, whose name is evading me, Goldberry. And then they just go on about their journey, and he's never really mentioned again, and it's fine. Rings of Power took a similar tack. They introduced Tom Bombadil in the second season of Rings of Power because similarly, they were like, we can take this thing that is kind of ridiculous and we can fit it somewhere in our story. And they, their take was even odder. I think Stephen Colbert will probably do a better job with Tom Bombadil, which is a weird thing to have to say in the year 2026. But yeah, so that's what's coming in this thing, and we'll wait to hear more about it. But
I am pro Tom, so yeah, let's go. More Tom.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing though that, like, you know, so we don't need to talk too much about this because I don't think either of us particularly wants to, but there was a new trailer for HBO's Harry Potter show that dropped today too as we record this. So this announcement for The Lord of the Rings, basically, we're going to make a movie out of the stuff Peter Jackson didn't bother to put in these iconic movies. We're going to make a whole movie out of it. And HBO rebooting Harry Potter, which is like doing the exact same story as the films, but in a darker, drabber color palette. And there is this feeling of like, are we scraping the bottom of the barrel with these IPs? To me, at least. I don't know how you feel about it or if you've thought about that at all, but seeing both of these announcements, I'm like, man, like, what are we doing here a little bit?
No, I have thought about that a lot for a lot of things that have come out. It does feel like no one wants to, and I understand not wanting to take a big budget chance on certain things, but sure. some properties, you get these new properties, a lot of these companies, they buy the rights to them just to hold them, not do anything with it. They realize, totally. Like, oh, I got this high budget fantasy thing or sci-fi or end of the world, anything. And like, oh, it costs this much money. Well, we can't do that because we can't guarantee a return on the money. We all love money. They love money too, more than most. So what's easiest to do? Let's just retell this same story we told 10 years ago, or dive into this IP, like you said, of these chapters that were ignored. Let's kind of bring them back in a different way and see what happens, and make sure we attach almost kind of a new writer. I know Stephen Colbert and his son, which is crazy, because I read an article when they just announced him as Stephen Colbert and son instead of putting his name up as Peter. Peter. I'm like, damn, I'm working on it too.
Yeah.
But it's almost like, I know you're a big fan. I know you probably really do care about this property, but it's not like you got like some crazy new writer, somebody kind of unknown. They're like, I have this magic script. Please give me a chance. It's like, no, Steve called you on the phone. Like, I got something for you, buddy. And yeah, here you go. There's no chances being taken really on anything, what it feels like.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the rights thing, especially for Lord of the Rings, like, we kind of know for a fact that is a factor, right? Because they did Lord of the Rings, they did The Hobbit. And like, there is a moratorium on those on Warner Brothers keeping those rights. And that's how things like The War of the Rohirrim got released, to extend their stay of those rights. And this feels a little bit like it's in the same, like The Hunt for Gollum and this. Not to say they can't be good movies. Like, you know, they have a lot of the same creative team. There's a chance they could be good. Like, I'm not going to totally count anything Peter Jackson makes out before I see it. Like, it could be great. But there also is this feeling of like, all right, what other tiny little things can we possibly make to expand this? Rather than like, you know, Game of Thrones has almost kind of taken the opposite track. And like, I give HBO credit that the things they've chosen for spinoffs are substantial enough stories on their own that they feel like they deserve their own adaptation, instead of just like, you know, doing a Robert's Rebellion show, which would have been an easier thing to do, like, you know, or the old Jon Snow show. Like, instead they're doing the Dance of the Dragons, Duncan Egg. Those are separate things in the same world. But yeah, that Harry Potter is even more egregious than that, because it's just remaking the thing that was, you know, those movies are still very beloved today. They're only 20 years old.
They told a story in 2.5 hours. You're going to tell me that you're going to give me 8 to 9 hours yeah. of content, 10 hours of content, and it's going to tell the same story. It's like, it's going to feel like it's dragging.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And you know, that's even aside from getting into the JK Rowling of it all, which
yes,
obviously I'm just going to assume we both have some opinions about.
Yes.
but we don't need to get into that. But yeah, just creatively, it is taking, like you said, something they made in a 2-hour movie that, like, you know, HBO keeps being like, this is a more faithful adaptation. It's like, the movies really weren't like that unfaithful. Like, I know some of them were less than others. Like, the fourth one did kind of toss a lot of cool stuff out. But like, the first one especially, like, it's pretty close. It's pretty close to what that book was.
It's like, would I love to see every Quidditch match? Yes. Are you going to really sit there and show me every Quidditch?
Yeah. Yeah, they filmed every single one. And all the ones that were just mentioned, they're going to montage those. But yeah, so we'll see what happens with Lord of the Rings, with Harry Potter, with all these big IPs. It's making me more grateful for the way Westeros is being handled. I will say that much.
Yeah, let's take a cool idea. Let's make this cool story. Let's go. I'm like, yeah. I'm all for it.
Totally. But yeah, so that's our show. You got anything else you want to say about Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, the heat death of original stories?
I will say I'm interested in this Lord of the Rings story. It does seem like how are they going to do that? Is there going to be flashbacks with all of them? Will we just see a flashback and it just center around Frodo's character? Because I don't want to de-age too many people. Maybe yeah. just one person, keep it at that. It's a high concept idea. I'm willing to see how it's going to be executed.
Yeah, same. I think, you know, the one thing I will say for the Lord of the Rings film that got announced is that it does seem like this is a genuinely passionate thing. Like, you know, with the Harry Potter show, we can pretty much draw a straight line to David Zaslav, who was the CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery. There was a while back where he basically said, we need to do more with Harry Potter. Like, he said this publicly. We know this is a thing that happened. You know, that IP has been on ice, which was kind of funny at the time because Fantastic Beasts was this thing and he just kind of ignored it. So they axed Fantastic Beasts and then decided to just do Harry Potter again as a way to keep using that IP. This is the opposite, where that was a very cynical, clearly money-driven, clearly financial-driven decision. This one, like Stephen Colbert, developed this idea for 2 years and really, 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 really loves The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm much more willing to give this a chance. I think it could be a good time. It could be something special. I am most worried about the de-aging stuff, I think, because so Frodo, maybe we should see him in flashbacks. So I guess Elijah Wood will be in flashbacks. He shouldn't be in the present timeline because he's gone already with the elves. Yeah. But the actors who play Sam, Merry, and Pippin, Dominic Moynihan, Billy Boyd, and Sean Astin, all of them are probably going to feature in it as their older selves and younger selves, I would assume. They haven't been confirmed. It hasn't been said that they're going to be in it, but I think we can safely assume they're in the synopsis. So, like, they got to be back for it.
They've probably already been talked to and they know about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I doubt they announced this without having them on board. And like, you know, the Hobbit actors especially have been, they were doing like a reunion tour recently where they were going to cons and stuff. So like, it seems like there's a lot of very good feelings among that cast and crew to be able to get back and do some more of this. But yeah, I'm much more willing to give this a chance than the Harry Potter show for sure. But yeah, all right, well, that's been our show. Thank you guys as always for listening. Make sure to like and subscribe. This has been Take the Black. Find us on YouTube, on Spotify, on your podcast platform of choice. Shoot us a comment, let us know what you think, if you'll be watching the new Lord of the Rings movie or the new Harry Potter show, or if you think you're gonna fall in love with Kristen Cole this season on House of the Dragon. Let us know. yeah. He is Mark Nettles. I'm Daniel Roman. And as always, it's been a pleasure. So until the next time we talk, Westeros. Yeah. Take care, and don't trust Daemon Targaryen.